Dragons and Their Boys. Written by Asuka Kureru. Read by Opal Song. Fandoms Gundam Wing and Temeraire. Rating Teen and Up. Category Gen. Also tagged for Alternate Universe Dragons and Crossover. Part 1 of the Dragons and Their Boys series. Recorded for Something Incorporeal for ITBE 2017. Summary. Gundam Wing, if it happened in the Temeraire universe. Or A Story of Dragons and Their Boys. A series of drabbles and one-shots. Gundams as Dragons. Author's Notes. Gundam Wing is a mecha show about a war between the five space colonies and Earth. The main characters are five 15-year-olds sent down to raise a fuss with their state-of-the-art kick-ass war machines. The Temeraire series is a Napoleon War with Dragons alternate universe, where sentient speaking dragons can be as big as a horse or big as a whale, and are bred and trained to use as warships. One, Wing. She'd been bred for re-entry, harnessed specifically for that single instant when, kicking free of the shuttle, she would drop like a stone into Earth's gravity well, straight past all those sensors barring the way to metal and ceramics. None of her trainers had told her it would feel as if, up until that day, she had never truly flown. None of her trainers had told her it would be beautiful. She plummeted through space, wings closed tight and neck and tail angled just right. She'd practiced and practiced for days and months and forever for this. When she slept in zero gravity, it was the stance she took, perfectly aerodynamic. But for the first time, she felt the strain of it, the insistent tugging of contrary forces, turbulence she sliced through even as they pulled at her, and the rush and the speed left her blind with exultation. In the back of her mind, she calculated trajectories and timing and re-entry speeds and terminal velocity, and she waited and waited for the order to open her wings and slow. And the longer it didn't come, and the stronger she loved her rider for loving the terrifying exhilaration of freefall as insanely as she did. Two, Death Scythe. See, he said, thrown negligently over his shoulder. If you'd crushed my egg, we could never have done this. His partner laughed, head thrown back, teeth bared. He growled out a laugh to match, and dove until the tips of his wings skimmed the water, and he roared his challenge to the sea. Here, this is mine, this wave and the next, it's all mine and I'll fight you for it. When his partner yelled his own war cry, puny, puny, and freed a hand from the reins to pump it at the sky, he flipped around and dumped him off the saddle into the sea. 3. Heavy Arms. She didn't mind plodding along the ground, going up and down and up mounds and slopes it might have taken her 3 seconds to fly past. She walked alongside her handler, wings furled, taking one step for the five he jogged. They watched the scenery, green trees and tiny, tiny birds, and a tiny strip of water flowing freely right there on the ground for anyone to take or bathe in. Not that she could have put more than a foot in it, but it was the principle of the thing. It was a lot like what he'd told her about. It wasn't new to him, but he seemed content nonetheless. He hadn't touched his gun for at least 2 minutes. That lake didn't seem so very far away from the sky, she mused, tail swishing. She didn't mind the trip. Four. Sandrock. Oh, God, it's hot. Why is it so hot? You brought me here on false pretenses. His friend laughed, hair matted and dark with sweat, so that it hardly gleamed like gold anymore. He harumphed and groomed one of his wings pointedly, and then gave in and draped it over his head to make a little shade. In a matter of minutes, the heat under his wing was suffocating, and he had to emerge again. I was bred for space, he muttered. Thicker skin to retain heat for days on end in hard vacuum. Not that my lungs would hold out that long, mind. Serious design flaw there. And where do you bring me? A desert. A desert! I admit it's very interesting how much the decor matches, though having your tail clambered on because it resembles a small dune is a bit disconcerting. But the heat! He took a big, dramatic pause, flicked the end of his tail in an elaborate pattern, the likes he had seen people do with their hands. His friend laughed again, patted his muzzle. I'm sure we could build you a tent, a couple of poles, a light cloth, open sides to let the breeze in. He oozed all over his warm, warm rock and dug his claws in delicious warm sand, defensive and wary, though it had been months since he was small enough to be moved bodily. No, thank you. Five. Shenlong. She had been named Long Shen Kai, even though she did not belong to the Shen breed in any strict sense. She was told her dam had been. The rest of her experiments. The other dragons had whispered it wherever she went. She was a thief of bloodlines, the noblest celestial blood, stolen and marred with wild uncouth Kazilik and that plodding mutt in white scales. Now she was named nothing and answered to nothing, not even to his voice when he attempted to call her the name her true rider had used, and she wished more of her robe had inherited her false sire's mourning colors, but the rest of her would be jade until she died. She would never answer to Nataku again, and she wasn't going to live until her robe faded. The end. Hatch. Part 2 of The Dragons and Their Boys series. Chapter 1. How many languages do you speak, boy? Jay asked one day, over his shoulder, absent-minded. The boy wasn't sure why that question had even been asked. Jay already knew. English, Japanese, and Russian fluently, some Cantonese. He frowned, thinking, what other languages? Notions of spoken French, Spanish, Arabic. Good, good. Dr. J kept tinkering with the microscope for a minute. The boy waited. Dragons learn language through the shell, the man said eventually. It'll be to our advantage that it knows as many as possible. The techs have English and Japanese covered. You can start with Russian. The boy hesitated. Should I give it lessons? He had never refused an order so far, half because Jay never gave him a task which he knew the boy physically could not complete, but he had no experience in formal education to draw on. No, no, not lessons. Jay looked at him over his shoulder, smiled a smile the boy could not read. Just talk to it, that'll do. Later, when he stood in the brooding room, before the patterned eggshell, the boy thought there was nothing just about any of it. It was stuffy in the small room, the air heavy and damp. The lights were red, so that even though it was daytime in the rest of the ship, in there it felt like the middle of the night. He closed the door behind him before all the heat could get out and leaned back against it. The egg was waist high, striated with night blue and gold. It seemed egg-shaped. There wasn't much else to be observed, and it wasn't like this was the first time he saw it. In any case, it hadn't changed since. He had 2 hours of liberty a day, between end of lessons and sleep, and he decided today he could spend one of them here instead of in his bedroom. There would be little difference. Only, now that he was here, he didn't have a clue where to start. Hello, he said, and didn't feel any less awkward now that he had started. Dr. J asked me to speak to you. He wants you to learn Russian. He stood there in silence for another minute or three, his sweaty back sticking to warm metal. Russian is spoken in Russia, and a lot of countries that used to be a part of it, several centuries ago. It's the largest country in the world, from Eastern Europe across all of North Asia. It spans 9 time zones. Some areas tend to be extremely cold and not densely inhabited. He freed a hand to tug on his shirt, which was sticking to him, tapped the toes of his shoe against the floor thoughtfully. I've never been. The blue of the shell looked black, like old tacky blood under the lamps, the gold specks orange like fire. He spent the rest of the hour going through numbers and conjugating whatever verbs he could think of. The day after that, he borrowed a book from one of the weapons teams and read aloud. It was about socioeconomics. He finished it in 3 sessions, and then frowned as he sat before the egg in the small, stuffy room. It wasn't very interesting, was it? It won't make you want to come out of the shell. They tried novels next, a Regency romance full of people whose motives baffled him, and a couple of murder mysteries, an autobiography. They reached the end of the available Russian texts after that. They're making your armament, he said. I don't suppose gun specs would speak to you much without seeing the schematics. It seems like it'll work well. He rubbed his heel against the floor, started worrying at his laces. Might as well take his shoes off. He sweated so much otherwise. The door was locked anyway, and it was the most secure area in the whole base. He wouldn't need to run anywhere in a hurry. Sometimes, in my head, I call myself Odin Jr. He wrapped his fingers in shoelaces, tugging back and forth. It's one of my oldest code names. It's obsolete, though. Long out of date. Pause. Breathe. The door was thick. Soundproof. The only sensors were on the egg. Heartbeat monitors. Pressure pads. I haven't been given a new one yet. The heat and red-tinged darkness, the size of the room, gave the false impression of being inside a sound-dampening field. Inside a shell. He wasn't sure. He wrapped his arms around his knees. Maybe Jay forgot, he said against his knees. and wasn't sure the egg could even hear him if he spoke so quietly. He spent the rest of the hour in silence. "Hello. Did you know you're part celestial? I heard it's the rarest Chinese breed. Jay said it meant you would be smart, at the very least. Otherwise, you're mostly European. One of the names sounded French." "I'm Japanese European. Maybe Russian. No idea." "Hello. Today I saw the projections for your adult appearance, based on your genome. You're nice to look at. Aerodynamic." "Hello. There was another incident on L1G1-5766. They brought up the death of Representative Yui again. One of the techs told me to tell you to hurry up. He annoyed me. If he doesn't like it, he can do something on his own. Don't hurry up for him. It'll be dangerous enough without going before we're ready. Just take the time you need." "Hello. My training is going well. I broke my speed record on the obstacle course. We're going to remodel it." "Your shell is getting harder, isn't it?" "I still don't know what to name you." The hatching happened off schedule, in the morning, interrupting his training. He came at the summons to find the egg had been moved out of the brooding room, into a wider space. The hardened shell looked weird in white light. Strange, unknown. Everyone was crowding around, watching. It was necessary, though, in case the hatchling rejected him as its rider, decided on someone else. He drew his shoulders back, broke past the ring of onlookers, and pushed his fingers in the cracks, widened them, dropped bits of shell on the ground. He could feel something warm and alive nudging at his fingers, viscous with amniotic fluid. The muzzle that pushed out was red and fit into his palm. It disappeared back into the shell, reappeared, pushed. The shell splintered all the way around, broken open. The boy's legs were splashed, swatted at with a soggy, awkward wing. The dragon sat in the bottom half of its egg and watched the crowd. Watched him. "Hello," he said in Russian, and couldn't say anything else. "Hello," his dragon said back. "I'm hungry. You said there was this tradition?" Jay silently handed the boy the harness, stepped back into the crowd. His silent presence jolted him back on script. "Yes. May I give you a name?"
"Have you found one yet?"
"No."
The crowd was whispering. The dragon didn't pay them attention, so the boy didn't either. "A code name, then. We will change it later."
He blinked. "Oh. I... Wing." Someone tittered. He didn't care.
The dragon beat her wings, splattering the crowd with fluid. They were covered in white down. So bright. Jay was muttering to himself, self-satisfiedly, about it.
"Wing, yes."
She bowed her neck to let the boy slip the harness over it, secure it. Her hide was soft and warm. Her eyes were thermal beam green when she looked up at him.
"May I give you a code name?"
He didn't say anything for a while, his hand in the harness. She must be famished. She asked anyway.
"Yes."
"You said Hiro Yui could have changed the world."
"Yes."
"But Odin killed him, so he does not need his name anymore."
She pondered this for a few seconds.
"I think you should take it, since you're going to change the world too. Only you will not die. May I eat now?"
Most of the crew didn't speak Russian, so they didn't know what was taking so long. Jay did, though. But the boy didn't think to look at him until after he had nodded his acceptance because he couldn't speak. Jay didn't say anything about it, though. just handed him the bucket with all the meat inside and herded the crowd away. Hiro sat on the floor and fed his dragon in silence, his hand on a blue and white, velvety hide, until she fell asleep.
Chapter 2.
He woke in the middle of the night to a man in a white coat leaning over him, hand stretched out towards his shoulder. "Oh, fuck, don't!" were the first words that made sense in the middle of the torrent of whispery babbling. No Name gave a slow blink and took the point of his knife off the man's neck. He recognized him, head scientist's right-hand man. Friedrichs. 3 in the morning and some change, station time. He sat up on his bunk as the man stumbled back and smoothed his coat. Friedrichs looked tense, but not ashamed, like a guy caught trying to slip in a teenage boy's bunk in the middle of the night ought to be. "Corridor," Friedrichs whispered. No Name considered it, then shrugged, slipped off his bunk straight into his old combat boots, and padded silently after him. No doubt they'd woken up other mechanics. It wasn't No Name's problem. They'd fall back asleep if nothing else happened. The dormitory door sealed closed. Arms crossed casually, knife still in hand, he stood in the gloom of nightlights and waited for Friedrichs to notice he wasn't following.
"We've got no time," the man hissed.
No Name shrugged. He could have spoken, but being woken up in the middle of the night made him edgy, and the adrenaline jolt still running through his veins didn't especially dispose him to friendliness.
"All right, fine, fine. You're pretty good with weapon systems. Resourceful. How old are you? Not 18, don't even try it. Whatever, it doesn't matter."
What does matter?
"Listen, it's sanctioned by Dr. S. He'll explain."
"Is it sanctioned by the base commander?"
"Aha," he thought, thoroughly unsurprised, as the man's face twitched. "It wasn't."
"I'm going back to bed."
He turned away. "Do you want your own dragon?"
Dr. S's voice stopped him first. Hadn't heard him coming. Bad for survival. But the words were what made him turn around, against his best judgment. Showing people that you had buttons to push only ensured that they keep pushing them. "There's only one egg on this station," No Name said, something they both knew. But everyone also knew the egg was to be someone else's, had been tailor-made for someone else. It wasn't like Troa Dekim Barton IV of the Barton Foundation was especially secretive or modest about it. Dr. S gave him a heavy-lidded look, and then a small, lopsided smile.
"Can't raise him on the radio, and he's not in his quarters."
No Name was sure they'd tried very hard. Yeah, and he had talon sheaths for sale, made in L2, guaranteed authentic silver and ivory. A dragon of his own. He'd mentioned he liked animals once, mostly because not answering would have made Troa keep pushing. He liked them better than people, was what he hadn't mentioned. The scientists didn't, for some reason, want Troa Barton to captain the Dragonette, and they couldn't afford to have it go masterless and feral on a space station, especially since so much money and time had been sunk into its genetic engineering. If no one else captained it, would it be killed and used for cloning samples? Locked in a cage? He could see their point of view. better some random mechanic with no agenda of his own and a liking for animals, and who was, apparently, able to take care of the dragon's armament on his own, than Troa Barton. But if no name said no, they just go and find someone else. Anyone but Troa Barton. He shouldn't get involved. Sounded dangerous. And when Troa woke up and found out, he was bound to go berserk on No Name and anyone else remotely involved. He already knew way too much anyway, just from this little discussion. So why not? The Bartons won't like it, he said, even as he took his first steps towards the waiting scientists. The Bartons won't know about it, Dr. S replied, if we're lucky. No Name arched a doubtful eyebrow. You won't have to care long, boy. The man rested a hand on his shoulder, totally ignoring the knife still in his hand. Your dragon can survive in space. There's nothing that can trap you. The end. AC-194, Part 3 of the Dragons and Their Boys series. He smelled wrong, was all. That was all she could say. He smelled wrong and she didn't want him on her back. Sometimes her companion came up to their daily training smelling a tiny bit of him, and she grouched. But that was nothing a good tongue bath wouldn't fix. And no matter how much her companion protested, she always ended up shrieking in laughter. And that was always a good thing. Kai knew it wasn't her companion's fault anyway. The elders were making them share a nest, to encourage mating. But like her, Marin would never consent to mate with anyone who smelled like that. You are not just hatched anymore, would say Great Aunt Long Quin Guo, in a chiding tone. It is unbecoming of you to throw such tantrums and hide behind bestial instincts to explain away your uncouth behavior. He is your companion's husband, and it is discourteous to make him walk.
I said he will not ride me, Kai would reply, so he may keep exercising his legs and not grow fat.
And she would snort a gust of uncouth fire and make her cousins recoil, because they all expected it of her anyway. And by the ancestors, if she was going to be looked down upon for her Kazilic blood, she would make every single drop count. Her companion was always torn between wincing and laughing, and in the end, laughing always won. You are a bad, wicked creature, she would say, and pet her nose. Come, Nataku, let's learn to blow smoke rings. Secretly, Kai sometimes thought she might have possibly forced herself to endure him as a passenger. So long as he made not a move closer to the base of her neck, where her companion sat. If, from the first day her companion had come storming in her pavilion, snarling and furious and hurt, Kai hadn't positively hated him. But as Kai grew, Marin's enjoyment of Kai's rebukes of her husband dimmed slowly, and his scent on her grew, inch by inch, until one day she went home screaming at him like always, and came back the next morning smelling of him so strongly nothing Kai could manage would erase it. Her face was red, and when Kai reared back and snorted, it was at Kai that she looked hurt. And then she used not the old nickname Kai responded to faster than her own name, but the official ones the elders had bestowed on her,
The one that said clearly what she was. Change. Modification. An experiment. Something new and untried and with no history behind her. Kai, he's not so bad, really. Maybe... You've mated, she hissed back. She couldn't stop herself, the betrayal in her voice. Because against Wu Fei was one of the core blocks of the wall that had cradled the entity called Merin and Nataku, and she was knocking it down. What? No, it was just... No, her companion had said, but she meant not yet. And so Kai spat out the gust of fire gathering in her throat and flew off before she could witness all that fiery defensiveness turning into flustered stammering and pleased embarrassment. She'd always been mouthy, but in the next week, she turned her tongue on everyone who committed the mistake of presenting her a target, and sometimes breathing beside her was enough to do so. Murmurs got louder, got into more berating, and she endured them somehow when they came from the elders. But when a dragon not a year older than she was started trying to lecture her as well, she struck, teeth and claws, like one of her wild ancestors. The next day, she was locked in an old, disused docking bay, since she couldn't be trusted to stay in her own pavilion if told to. And she was still so furious she could have melted a hole in the outside hull and flown off, if anyone had dared to walk in and aggravate her one inch further. The next day as well, and the third, since she had not repented yet, not apologized. The fourth day, the colony started shaking. She called and screeched and clawed at the door, the ventilation shafts, everything was sealed tight. She could feel the low, resonant boom of explosion through the soles of her feet, but not more. Sound couldn't penetrate. She strained for a human voice, but nothing. She was going crazy. Nataku! It was him. It wasn't her. Standing in the door with tools still in hand and sparks from the shorted-out console burning his arms. She didn't care right now. Almost bowled him over. I know where she is! He had dragged her lightest harness here. Mere silk loops. Everything else would have been too heavy. Slowed him down, she knew. And Merin would need something when she caught up with her. So she allowed him to throw it on her back. Tug it closed. And then she grabbed him in her hand and flung him on her back. And she was gone. In the corridors, she could only run, not fly. And dragons weren't made for speed on the ground. But she eeled around tight corners and jumped over staircases and ignored the teeth-grinding hiss of her claws on metal. On her back, Wu Fei held on like he'd been riding galloping war dragons all his life, and good for him, she wouldn't have stopped to pick him up. Left! Full-length glass window. Fire! She spat, hit flame-weakened glass and clear plastic dead-on, uncoiled like a spring into the air, wings belling open even as shards sliced at them. In the air, she listened to his hands slapping her sides. Left. No more left. That way. Since she didn't have reins and there was so much smoke he couldn't speak. She arrowed in on the right direction, ignoring the dogfighting mobile suits and drop shuttles and her own cousins. That suit down here, Wu Fei was telling her. She was turning her head obediently to his voice, already diving, thinking her Merin did not belong in a machine, but better than another dragon. None of her cousins fought. They were too good for it. But when Merin was on Kai's back, Kai truly could become Nataku. And a mobile suit came and sliced it in two. There was nothing between that moment and landing. Crashing, truly. With the enemy suit in flames behind them. Nothing before she started clawing the soldered closed door open. Slowly! Screamed Wu Fei, voice raw like he'd told her a dozen times before, and she gentled her hold, pried it open inch by inch as he slid down her neck. She was keening and she couldn't stop, and she couldn't slip in and take Merin out, but Wu Fei could. He could. Kai loved him. Could get her out. Save her. She couldn't see the blood on her companion, but she could smell it. Could smell nothing but. Behind them, the cockpit was painted carmine. No, 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 no! She knew Marin was still talking. Could see her lips moving, but she could hear nothing. It was as if all the world had gone silent. Her companion went still in Wufei's arms, in the tight coil of Kai's body. Marin went still, and the world went still with it. For a minute. A century. Wufei reclined her down slowly on the ground, gentle like her companion still even cared about that, and slowly he looked up, and his teeth were bared. No mercy. They killed a lot of people that day, and in the end, when they were growing weary of it and the world wasn't so rage-hazy, they let those run who wanted to run. But by then, there were very little of those left. Marin would have disapproved. She, who often said the weak should not fight, and one weak enough to run away was definitely not worth the effort, but only perhaps some pity. Kai never regretted it. They hadn't killed enough. His skin still smelled wrong to her. He was still like an itch on her back, too male to ever be hers. They had both been Marin's. It would have to do. It was okay. It wouldn't have to do for very long. The end. Wing and Scythe meet. Part 4 of the Dragons and Their Boys series. There was a dragon in his sea, and it was drowning. Hey, buddy, he said, even as he banked. Look over there, will ya? Duo clambered over his shoulder and up part of his neck, using his spines as rungs. They weren't kitted out for open warfare today, recon at best, and his harness was light enough that there was nothing for his human to secure himself to. It was a good thing Duo was agile like a monkey. Then again, humans, monkeys, not so much of a difference, eh? What the hell are they doing to her? There was a ship, too. Alliance, by the look of it. Which made Scythe growl low in his throat. And smoke puff and a little curl out of his nose. But Duo swatted his neck with the flat of his hand, and he dropped it for now. He was more interested in the other dragon, sleek and deep blue, in his weight class or thereabouts. Also, drowning. There were little floating boats all around her. For a moment, he thought they were trying to sink her and bristled all over. They're tying lines to tow her, Duo said, and, oh yeah, so they were. Well, guess he didn't need to melt them down into slag just yet. They circled the ship from afar, low enough that some of the cresting waves sprayed them. It was no effort, he discovered, to let his hide keep up that slow-moving pattern of mottled gray, green, blue, white he'd been playing with, so that at a distance, human eyes would see nothing but another patch of sea. Radars would see nothing at all. He had no armament on board today to show up on a scanner, and shed no body heat, and Duo had his bodysuit on under his clothes, of course, or else he'd be bitching up a storm about his incoming hypothermia every time Scythe dumped him in the drink. It was strange that a dragon, whose body was riddled with air sacs from head to tail tip, could ever float as badly as she did. Maybe they'd hooked too much shit to her harness? Nevertheless, he and Duo almost turned tail and left them to it,
They seem to have the situation well in hand, and it would be stupid to get noticed before the first attack and ruin all that nice advantage of surprise. Only then the dragon beat her pale gray wings over the surface once, twice, before sinking again, and suddenly he was stiff all over, and for a second he didn't know why. Just that he'd felt Duo go tense like a strung bow, legs tightening on his neck. Motherfucker! Duo swung a leg on the other side of his nape and slid backward down, Scythe's neck on his heels, serrated spines whizzing past just under his very unarmored crotch. He wasn't holding on with anything, but Scythe didn't even think to dump him. Did I just see? Death Scythe, stalking pattern 3. Fall back, don't lose them. Duo didn't bother saying, we can't afford to lose them. But it came clear anyway. Her wings, at first glance, seemed mottled cloudy gray. Or maybe those patterns were some very strange full-wing scar tissue. At second glance, they were merely covered in god-fucking-mother-damned feathers! Deathscythe felt a shiver of excitement run through him, and for a brief instant, his own unnatural gene-fucked hide sparkled with reds and yellows. Hero, what are you doing? Said the unknown girl, composure wavering. Wing closed her eyes, even as her rider whirled away from her, aimed his gun at the intruder. Wing had seen her following her rider, but she was so obviously not an operative in her party dress, she had ignored her, hoping guiltily, that he wouldn't notice the intruder until it was done, until Wing didn't have to care anymore. Care that he would be seen, that someone might tell and betray him and get him even more in trouble. Didn't have to care, to mind, that he would follow her into death as soon as he disposed of her body. There was always lots of kerosene on a base, and her rider was a very efficient person, and she knew what the fastest way to get rid of both liabilities would be. What are you? That poor dragon! You can't mean to! But the girl, the civilian, had spoken and distracted him and stopped him before he could put Wing down. And Wing's throat was thick with the need to keen out her guilt, her grief, her relief. Her side hurt, pain pulsing in red flashes, even through the numbing cream an enemy doctor had slathered on earlier. She wished she could have found enough air to fight back against the red dragon that raked her with his claws and knocked her clean out of the sky, to drown and be captured by the enemy. She wished she could have fought at least once, not made this trip down to Earth and their purpose, the whole reason she had been hatched at all, into such a total failure, such pointlessness. Instead, she was too injured to fly and a prisoner, and soon they'd realize the patchwork of breeds she represented wasn't due to being feral and mutated, but to having been tailor-made that way. She heard the report of a weapon, and her eyes flew back open because it had come from too far away to be Hero's. Her rider was on his knees. The scent of his blood hit her and she reared up, hissing in sudden fury. The chains holding her secured to concrete screeched, threw sparks, but held, and she thrashed furiously in her bonds, even though she could feel her stitches tearing. Someone was shooting her rider. Someone was shooting her rider! Through the blood beating in her temples, she barely heard a young, male, human voice. The flippant, "Are you all right, ladies?" But it was enough to pinpoint the attacker. She breathed in, and in, and in. Chains kept her chest from extending fully, but who cared? At this distance, it would be enough. Something landed on her back like several tons of bricks. She wheezed, squirmed around in her bonds like an eel, fangs bared. A heavy, dark wing curled over her eyes, blocking her line of sight and offering no purchase for her fangs. She clawed and clawed again. It hurt. She felt dizzy. She couldn't stop. A second shot. A splash. the girl screaming. Shit, scythe, incoming! Light blinded her, and a whirl of colors. The strange dragon lifted off her, beating thick black wings, snatched up the killer, and was gone. It took too long, much too long, for Wing to follow the track of her rider's blood on the dock, for bolts to shear off under her relentless pull, and loosen her bonds enough that she could drag herself to the edge and see her rider floating limply face down in the water. When the Oz platoon swarmed the area, they found her with her front paws extended over the edge as far as they would go. Her bonds wouldn't break all the way, and she couldn't reach far enough to fish him out. And then the enemy men went in the sea, and they took him away. No, seriously, what did you expect? That your dragon would magically pop up and pick you up straight from a cliff face? Dragons aren't eagles. They can't dive that close to friggin' rock, even if she weren't friggin' injured and also not here. What the hell happened to her anyway? Hero didn't bother speaking to the boy who had first shot him and gotten him captured, and then later broken him out. The offshore boat was loud enough that Hero could pretend he hadn't heard, could just spare a single glance for a person annoying enough to attempt conversation in these conditions, and then ignore him. As for the boat's driver, an adult man in his 30s, he'd been studiously pretending not to pay attention to either of the teenagers ever since he'd picked them up, like he wanted to be able to say he didn't remember any details about either of them later on. Hero had no issue with it. Wing could have picked him up, actually. Hero just hadn't even thought that far. He hadn't thought at all. Mission failed. Couldn't afford to be caught and spill his secrets. And under torture, everyone broke eventually. One very obvious solution. And then freefall, making everything so simple, so blindingly obvious. His life was not his own. He'd been hasty, wanting to discard it, without first making sure there was no other way. Still, he couldn't help but wish the darling girl had not screamed, so that he wouldn't have remembered his duties. He looked up when the roar of the motor changed pitch and the boat slowed, tense until he could determine with a glance that the other teenager hadn't noticed his lapse. His moment of inattention. Then he looked ahead. Huh. Not a bad setup. They were approaching an old drilling platform, repurposed into a base for a flotilla of salvage ships, probably all very legal and mostly above board, so that when inspectors came poking around, they didn't leave with anything more than the expected piddling bribes to ignore infractions no one truly cared about. It wouldn't be very easy to steal a boat and escape, if the boy had lied, but Hero would do it anyway. Escape at all costs. At worst, he could also find a dark corner under the docking platforms and drown himself, properly this time around. It wouldn't be pleasant, but what did it matter? They circled around. The platform was U-shaped, barracks and hangars encircling an inner harbor, and a black dragon sunning himself on an inner deck, long-bodied and muscular, covered in spines, tail hanging negligently over the edge. And in the water underneath, a streamlined night blue head and a long blue-white neck. Aw, damn! What is she doing in the drink? Hey, Scythe, you lazy bastard! The black dragon looked up at them, flicked a paw at them in a way that could have been a wave. Lazy bastard yourself! I was back years ago! What took you so long? Well, sorry if I had to break through several layers of security and you just had to swoop in and swoop back out. Sorry, just what? Do you have any idea what she weighs? She's almost as heavy as I am. Hero tuned them out. The man driving the boat had cut the motor so that they glided along on their own momentum, progressively slowing down. Wing had taken over a submerged floating pier to support her upper body,
Likely it hadn't been submerged beforehand, at that. When the man started to direct them to another ladder to the dock, prudently out of reach, Hiro tensed, fists clenching. But he couldn't swim well with a broken leg, and it was useless to bother. He could see from here that she was alive and conscious, and there was nothing more to be done. He would merely reveal a weakness. The boy with the braid had cutting eyes, two knowing by half. Hiro stared back blankly, refusing to give anything. "Davy, man, actually, just go straight ahead. I get the feeling she'll come to us if we don't come to her." Hiro turned away from him, refusing to acknowledge whatever would be on that face. Smugness or calculation, or worse, pity. The boat bobbed a little as it turned again. Earlier, Hiro would have scoffed at the thought that Wing might bound up to them like a badly trained dog. But when he looked, he could see the way she stared at the boat, at him, her neck stiff with tension. You would have had to be blind to miss it. It felt weird. "See?" the black dragon rumbled, self-satisfied, and rested his head on his crossed paws at the edge of the deck. "Told you my partner would fetch him for you." Hiro and Wing stared at each other in silence as the boat slowed down, as the boy stopped its momentum, with a boot pressed to the ladder. She didn't arch her neck to sniff at him. He didn't reach out to touch her hide. They just watched each other. Alive, injured, but nothing that wouldn't heal. Take care of that, and they would be free again. Free to try to fulfill their mission, and perhaps fail again. He wasn't sure what he felt about that, but his feelings had never been included in the debate. "Let's get you up on deck, yeah?" Hiro wasn't sure who the boy was talking to, but he didn't care much. He didn't need his held-out hand. He turned to face the deck. Wing slipped her nose under him and lifted him up on the deck, and he barely wobbled at all when she set him down, and his broken bone shifted under his skin. And when she climbed after him, she didn't make a sound, even as blood flowed away with the streaming water. Duo had slept by Scythe as far back as there had been a Scythe. Farther, even, because the place they kept the egg was the warmest in the whole bedamned station. Stupid war funds, allocated to weapons and training before fixing the stupid insulation. When Scythe hatched, he started sleeping on Duo's chest, which they kept up until the spines hardened, a week in. After that, there were a couple of weeks of side-by-side, my leg on yours, your wing on my face, which were awkward as hell, because Scythe kept rolling around. His spines itched, and steamrolling Duo. Duo was now the proud owner of a series of amusing dotted scars where his own dragon had almost pincushioned him to death. Now Duo slept on Scythe instead, in the smooth hollow between his wings. But he still had the hard-won hair-trigger waking reflex. Scythe was perfectly still, but Duo knew he was awake. Duo didn't move either, staring at the hangar's roof with his arms tucked under his head, waiting for his dragon's cue. When it came, it was in the form of a purring, mock-disappointed whisper. "Now, now, don't make me eat you." The silence acquired a sudden layer of even more silence somehow. Duo gave in to curiosity and leaned over the rough, pebbled edge of his dragon's wing. The other boy was standing there, unmoving. Duo had to admire the ballsiness it took to get into a staring contest with a dragon when you were well within jaw's reach. He didn't let go of Scythe's harness either. "Oh, fuck you! You were gonna steal our rig?" Duo asked in pure disbelief. "After we risked our asses to get you guys out?"
"Leaving us in their hands would have attracted attention to you as well," the boy retorted tersely.
Duo growled and started feeling around the hollow for his shoes, so he could throw one at his head. Perhaps a nice wrench.
"There's no choice," the feathery dragon said. Her partner snapped, "Wing!" at her to shut her up, but she only glanced at him and ignored it.
"We have a mission. We need combat gear and weapons."
"That's information they don't need," the boy gritted out. Duo straightened up and stared. "What? Recon's one thing, but fighting? She's injured!"
"It isn't that bad," she replied,
voice utterly bland.
"Yeah, sure. And Duo was the queen of Machu Picchu."
Duo stared at them a little longer. Then he raked a hand through his bangs and tugged.
"Ugh! You'll pluck yourself bald, monkey face,"
Scythe said, nudging him gently with his nose and sending him flopping on his side. Duo thwapped his muzzle as revenge and threw himself off Scythe's back, sliding along the wing. He landed and immediately went stomping to face the dragon and her boy.
"Listen, you idiots! Has it even occurred to you two to ask us to help?"
"It's our mission," the boy snapped back, hostile. Duo rolled his eyes.
"I meant with getting back her rig. She cut it off herself when she crashed, yeah? So they'd think she was feral?"
"That was smart," he said as an aside to her. Wing looked startled that he'd figured that out, but it was the only thing that made sense, and way obvious besides. A trained operative wasn't going to ride a fighting dragon in hostile territory bareback.
"I don't know if you've noticed, but Scythe has no feathers to get stupidly waterlogged, and he can stop breathing for 2 hours and 13 minutes last we clocked him."
Scythe puffed up his chest and tried to look modest. Duo crossed his arms, glowered. The boy scowled back, but then again, that was his default expression.
"We're on the same side, okay? The side of not their side. And I know it doesn't mean we have to be allies, but it's not like it'll stop being a target-rich environment out there."
"I don't want to owe anyone."
"Oh, like you don't owe us for saving your asses yesterday?
Yeah."
"Aha! That was a nice little eye twitch."
"I didn't ask you to." Duo stared at him a while longer, trying to figure out which end to handle him from. The guy was stubborn and crazy enough to jump off cliffs and ignore his parachute, and then not even die! Or straighten his own goddamn broken bones with his own hands. This would never not be disgusting. He wasn't going to stop until Scythe sat on him. But after that, he'd be pissed, too, and they would have made him an enemy. Rather a thief than a beggar. Heh. Not that Duo had any clue at all about that sort of mindset. "Not at all, Mr. Policeman, sir. Actually, going right up to a dragon to steal his stuff was exactly the kind of ballsy Duo approved of on principle. Still, he had his own pride to take care of here. Scythe's gear won't help you much anyway. There's only so much you can do with adjusting straps before the whole rig slips off. And in combat, you can't afford that." Still a stony glare. The guy knew that, but he also thought he had to take the risk.
"I'd grant you it might perhaps work if they had the same overall body type, but..."
He gave a little hand signal. Scythe obligingly lowered his main pair of wings, raised the secondary. Much smaller, perhaps 3 times Duo's own body length stretched out, and, he knew, pretty much invisible amongst the spikes until he used them separately, which he didn't bother with unless it was time for serious acrobatics. They didn't even get a blink out of the guy. Duo put his hands on his hips and glowered, disgruntled. Scythe looked a little thrown at the lack of reaction, sneaking the other dragon a look. She merely tilted her head and started preening her even more incongruous white feathers, totally ignoring him. "Yeah, well, you can't even swim!" Her head darted back to face him like a snake, and she hissed right against Scythe's nose.
"I can break Mach 1!
Duo couldn't have helped laughing if he'd tried, and he didn't even try.
"Aw, man, yours can't have been out of the shell that much longer than mine. How long's it been?"
At that clearly unfounded accusation of childishness, the feathered dragon sniffed her disdain and went back to preening herself. The glowery teenager kept glowering. though it had an edge of confused surprise to it that was swiftly squashed when he noticed Duo was noticing. "All right," Duo said, sobering up. "I get why you won't apologize. But if you want our help this time around, you're gonna have to say please." "Yeah, cold day in hell," Duo thought, as he watched his face get somehow even more non-expressive. He still had one card to play, though. And if it didn't work, well... well, then he'd know a lot more about his non-ally than he did right now. Injured like she is, she can't maneuver as she should. If she goes without her gear and support weaponry, she'll get killed. I think you know that, or you wouldn't have bothered trying to steal ours. Silence. The wind was cold at this hour, rushing in from the sea. The whole complex was quiet. Duo wouldn't have been surprised if they were the only ones awake. He pegged the time at dark o'clock in the morning, or thereabout. "What do you want from me?" His voice was quiet, a little raspy, his head bowed so that Duo couldn't see his eyes anymore behind those dark bangs. Duo quieted his own voice to match. "Just for you to say please." More silence. Duo wasn't going to prompt him anymore. If they both survived a while, they might run into each other again, and Duo needed to know how far he could throw him. He understood risking your own life rather than losing your pride, but risking your dragons? Now that he refused to get. "I'm not that hurt," the dragon said. The teenager's hands clenched. "Please." And as Duo started to relax, the boy's chin lifted, his eyes piercing, burning with determination. "But we go now." "Oh, man." Duo sighed, considered his arguments. "I'm cold. He would be sitting his ass on a goddamn fire breather. I'm sleepy." "Yeah, good for you. I'm sure the bad guys out there will wait until after 9 o'clock to bother you." "She's still injured." "Yeah, so was her rider, and he used that leg like it hadn't been broken yesterday. Hell, maybe his boss had tinkered with more than just the dragon." Duo sighed and gave in. Better to go at night anyway, less of a chance of being seen. "All right, fine. Let us kit up." He looked up at the feathery dragon. "You got the coordinates?" She did, of course, down to the square inch or almost. When Scythe asked her about her carrier pigeon grandmother, Duo wasn't even surprised that she bit him. The end. Music. Part 5 of the Dragons and Their Boys series. The violin and the flute sang together, sharp, sweet, and husky notes winding around each other like two dragons rising in a tight spiral. The high, vaulted ceilings only amplified it, so that the music spilled over into the garden. Two dragons who had just met, she judged from the times they didn't keep in formation, and one would lag or add a few entirely unnecessary flourishes. But outside of battles, dragons only flew inside each other's trajectory for very specific reasons. "So," she inquired blandly, laying her head down in front of one of the huge French doors so she could see her handler. "Nice mating ritual. Getting you anywhere yet?" The violin gave a shrill, discordant wail and went silent. The human with the shiny hair started going red in the face. Troa lowered the flute and sighed quietly, giving her a reproving look. heavy arms scratched the underside of her jaw with a thick, dulled claw. "We were not! This isn't..." the boy sputtered. She gave him an amused look as Troa stopped him with a lifted hand and turned to her. "What do you want?" She considered. Nothing. A small tilt of her head, so she could see the blonde rider better over the thick spurs that framed her jaw. "Maybe give hints to your dragon. He's not half as good at flirting as you are." Behind her, the ochre and sand dragon sputtered. "I beg your pardon. That is called being hospitable." She scratched her chin some more, watching him heavy-lidded. "A whole cow?" "A fat one, too. Very tasty. He'd even let her kill it herself. Her first blood. First taste of protein not grown in a vat." It wasn't a bad attempt at flirting at that, but... "Do you have an issue with Sandrock? I really wish we could all get along." "Actually, it's a rather good sign," Troa said. She eyeballed him. Troa was smirking faintly, but when the boy asked, "Is it?" he refused to explain. Good. Took all the fun out of teasing if he was going to warn people that she only did it to people she liked. When she didn't like people, why waste time and effort antagonizing them when she could just stomp them flat? It didn't take any energy, just gravity. Besides, if she kept Sandrock on his toes, maybe he'd bring her another cow. The end. If you enjoyed this podfic, please leave feedback, both for myself and for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong. Thanks for listening!